Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft Live, where taxation is theft, just like it is everywhere else. Clayton, what's going on? Oh shit, I just realized I screwed something up, but let's keep going for now. I still have somebody else's name on the screen.
Well,
it was a last minute Clayton show Hunt. That we threw together.
Clayton Hunt. If you don't know who I am, Clayton Hunt.
Clayton Hunt District.
How you doing?
House District. He's running for, I'm typing this in as we go, for House District 145. So, the reason that we kind of just threw this together at the last minute is because we just found out that there's a special election going on. Tell us about it. You know the history better than I do.
All right. So I've been kind of on this, and I've been sitting here, you know, predicting this for over a year now. Basically, I live in Texas, which everyone thinks, you know, Texas is a deep red state. It's so Republican. But there's these little pockets of blue in the deep red sea, and it's usually around major cities, and I'm in one of those little deep blue pockets. And basically, in my area, whoever wins the Democratic primary, that's basically they're going to win the general. The general is just a formality at that point. So my congressman last year announced that he was going to resign and that he was retiring from politics completely. My state senator announced that she was going to run for Congress, for the Democratic nomination for Congress. And basically the way it works is that she won that primary. And the day after, my former general election opponent already announced for state Senate. And so basically, long story short, my now former state senator, now congressperson, won her race for the general election. My opponent, they immediately called a special election after that. My opponent, of course, was already running for that race. She won on the first time. There was no runoff. She is the next state senator. And now, basically, we're just waiting for the official word from the governor setting the date of the special election. But it's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, but, you know, when. So I ran in the general election on the Libertarian banner. I got 10% of the vote, considering the fact that my opponent outraised me by 200%, and I got, you know, outraised, outspent, and still did fairly well for a third-party candidate, I'm going to come into this special election and, you know, give it another shot.
Nice. So, yeah, it's interesting because there's, like, you know, a lot of people think this is just, you know, I guess the public perception of what an election is and how it works is just kind of like, oh, yeah, one person, one vote. And then, you know, but like, you know, some people, it's kind of like the next level of woke is you start to like realize there's things like the Electoral College and representative votes. You vote for somebody to vote for you and all this other crap. And then there are all these kind of shenanigans like special elections and all this other stuff, which is really interesting because, you know, everybody shows up for like, well, when there's a presidential vote, like where everybody's going to go vote for Dan's taxation and Steph Berman. There's everybody shows up. Everybody knows about that. And it seems like in the midterm elections, like the, you know, so that's like 2016, 2018, what we just had in November, still like the big primary election, still the same time of year, just 2 years later, like right in between presidential elections, nobody knows about it. So what, like half the amount of people show up, which is already like half of the people who are able to vote show up for the main presidential elections, half of that show up for the midterm elections. And then you have like special elections, runoffs, and all this other stuff that like nobody shows. Nobody knows they're even happening. Nobody goes. These aren't important.
When you say nobody goes, so fun fact, that my Senate district has set the record for the lowest amount of total votes in a state Senate race in Texas since 1996. And you know who we set it this past when December 11th, when that was the election, we set the record for the lowest vote totals. You know who we displaced as the lowest vote totals before this?
No.
Us in 2013 when we had another special election. We beat ourselves. We lowered the bar again.
Nice.
If this was if we're talking about lowering and lowering and lowering it, how low can you go? Are we going limbo? Well, we're like the limbo champs of Texas for state Senate districts.
Nice. So what's the actual number? Do you happen to have those numbers? Like the actual number of votes or what percentage or how many people are in the district?
I think it was like 16,000 in 2013 and it's like 15,000 in 20.
And it's got to be out of like 120,000 or something, right?
It's like a 5% voter turnout. I mean,
wow.
It is in special elections, it is ridiculously low. I will say though, it's not like they didn't like advertise it. My opponent, she raised a lot of funds and she dumped a lot of money into that special election. It's just people don't show up. People don't do it.
Yeah. And you know, I hear so often that, you know, well, voting doesn't matter because you're just choosing your master. You know, all this stuff that, and you know, I won't say these aren't good arguments. You know, like in the presidential election, we would have been choosing our masters because those were the only options we had. But in so many other races, and yes, I know Gary Johnson was running. In so many other races, you know, we have people like Clayton Hunt who are, it's not like if he gets elected, he's going to be the unicorn that walks in there and stabs everybody with his horn and now it's all sunshine and rainbows. But he is going to go in there and he is going to raise hell and he is going to, you know, whenever these other morons come out and say, well, hey, the people elected us to write laws, and we just wrote one that's going to create a new tax that we can stick in our pockets for free without consequences. He's going to be there to say, no, you're not. Because you there? Like, are you going to go? Are you, like, do you go to Congress and say, like, you know, we don't like this bill? No, nobody goes. Like, even people who live in Austin and hate what the state Congress is doing will not go. Like, it takes, like, it's only like, yeah, oh, yeah, there's this one special thing that I care about. I'll go for that one. But,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, you mentioned, like, Gary Johnson. You mentioned all these. A lot of times what happens is, especially during the actual election, there's like, this top-of-the-ticket, like, derangement that goes on where people focus on, especially, and this, I say especially derangement for, like, third-party supporters. If you're in a third party, you're not going to win the top of the ticket. I hate to say it. I'm sorry, Dan, but we're not going to win the presidency in 2020. We weren't going to win the, you know, governor's mansion or in Texas, the big race really wasn't even the governor's race. It was a Senate race, but we weren't going to win that race. We weren't going to win the governor's house. That we don't have the infrastructure for that. And what I saw, not even just in Texas, but across the country, everyone puts their faith and their hopes and their dreams at the top of the ticket where the party has the least amount of of chance of victory. And when they do that, they get disappointed because they're never going to win. And even then, like, it's not even just a chance of you're not going to win. You're not going to do very well, because a lot of times the wasted vote syndrome is the strongest there, because that's where people are extra polarized. I remember a few years ago, it was like Greg Abbott versus like Wendy Davis, right? And for the Republicans, Wendy Davis is like the Antichrist. She was pretty much the devil incarnate, walked the earth in pink sneakers, and that was her. And she's running for governor. And you may not like Greg Abbott, but you gotta vote for him because it's either him or the devil. And that's like this year with Ted Cruz and Beto. Beto for conservatives was the devil incarnate, and for Democrats, Ted Cruz is the devil incarnate. I mean, in these top of the ticket candidate races, stuff gets so polarized and so, you know, dire. Every single election is the most important election of our lifetime, especially for the top of the tickets. And so when that happens, a lot of times people will not be willing to budge from their old parties on that. And when we put all our hopes, dreams, effort, time into these top of the ticket candidates and it goes to waste, I think the way I see it is it kind of sets a party back.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement, because it's for one thing, you're putting all your faith in a candidate, but you're trying to almost masquerade them as like a normal person when we are not normal.
Normal person, dude. What the hell are you talking about? Totally normal.
So yeah, and it's like for one, that makes us liars if we're going to try to pretend to be that. Then there's also like this, you know, there's this big fight, right? So like, let's say it's like Mayweather versus Holyfield, right? Like that's the Democrat versus the Republican, right? That's the fight everybody wants to see. And we're kind of like, you know, over on the judges table saying like, hey, break up the fight, you guys. Like,
and the thing that actually, that's a really great, like, so imagine it's, you know, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, that's the Democrats and Republicans, that's every single top of the ticket race, it's their strong champion against the other guy's strong champion, and you gotta go, they've gotta duke it out, and everyone wants to talk about the Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali fight. I know. They exist in different eras, whatever. But
how old are you, man?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I'm a millennial. Boxing hasn't been like popular my entire life.
Right.
Mayweather kind of killed it. But you have to understand, like, we're kind of like the undercard, right? We're the fight before the fight, and we may not be as glitzy and glamorous and but I think where we are going to win is focusing on the undercard, because we've got to get those wins on the undercard rank before they're starting to put us in contention with the all-time greats. You can't just start off and jump in with the ring with Muhammad Ali. You got to fight some no-name guys and get some experience under your belt and get something, right. You know, it really wouldn't even say it's like experience, like ruling, being part of the ruling class, but experience running for office and winning, you know, right. Figuring experience out experience points,
literally.
Yeah.
But it's like more than that. Like I see, you know, everybody kind of has this imaginary thing of, you know, I mean, whether you're talking about the fight analogy or what a president is, everybody has this imaginary kind of vision or framework in their mind of what this is, right? And they look at boxing and they think like, oh yeah, this is all just like wonderful stuff. Like, oh yeah, they train for a couple weeks and then they go get in a fight, when really, no, they're in the gym every day. They're practicing and practicing and practicing. And when it comes to the election, it's the same kind of thing. It's Trump just decided to run like 6 months before the election, or, you know, a year before the election. He just threw his hat in the like he wasn't planning it for 6 years before, which he probably was.
For decades, like literally since like the '80s, he was talking about running for president since the '80s.
Probably.
And he finally just did it.
Yeah. So on that, like also like people think like, oh, my fighter is going to go in the ring. He's going to dominate the other fighter. And then from that point on, he is the king and whatever he wants to do will go. And it's like they complete, it's like, this was the mentality of the wall thing. Like somebody just posted a meme today. Yes, I'm fucking referencing a meme in conversation again. Fuck me. There was a meme that said like, it was 2016 Trump says Mexico will build the wall. And then 2017 Mexico will pay us back for the wall. And 2018 is, if you don't give me the money for the wall, I'm going to shut down the government. The reality is people thought he was going to go in there like this king champion boxer, the like, heavyweight champion that's going to say, oh, we're going to build this wall and we're going to do all these things just because I say so, they're going to happen. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's not happening, because he can't do that. There's other people involved with that. There's Congress and all these other people. And that's the reality is, you know, everybody's going to complain about a law that was passed, but nobody's going to like, you know, oh shit, we have more laws banning bump stocks. We have more laws doing this, doing that. And it's like, but wait a minute, Trump was supposed to like be on our side and save us. And it's like, he's not the one writing those laws. Like, these are all the other people. And I understand.
The bump stocks thing is it's all at his feet, because it's ATF. It's not going through Congress. And they were trying to go put it through Congress, and they said, wait, we don't have to put it through Congress. We can just have ATF write its own laws and outlaw them by themselves.
That just killed my entire argument.
Yeah, no. But no, which, I mean, yeah, like, they can do whatever they want as long as it's bad.
Right. Basically. Well, as long as they've, because the reality is, Congress already gave them that authority. And that's really that's how a lot of it happens. Like, you know, Congress says like, oh yeah, you can do this. Like, so what a lot of people, especially like when I argue with people about the tax code back and forth, is like some people come out and they say, look, it says right here you have to pay taxes, and they'll cite the federal regulations. Those are not laws. They were not written by Congress. Congress basically said, here's the IRS. We give power to the IRS. And then we give power to the IRS to write regulations. And so regulations are, they're not actually law, they're regulations. They're operating procedures for, but it's interesting because it's like they're delegating power to these, like, you know, they're just creating these like really massive vague laws saying that, hey, this organization can exist and they can do whatever they want. And so now that organization can say, oh, well, we can write laws because they basically said we can do whatever we want.
The ATF has been doing this for years. I mean, like, the idea of, like, even bump stocks, gang, like, a lot of devices like this, when it comes down to things like AR pistols versus, like, SBRs, a lot of this comes down to people, you know, looked at the law, what it says, and then looked at how the ATF is enforcing this, and basically said, hey, ATF, if I do this, and technically it's not in violation of the law, are you going to, you know, shoot my dog, you know, and kick down my door, shoot my dog, burn my house down for this? You know, things the ATF has historically done to people that violate firearms laws. And basically what the ATF does is it issues, like, opinion letters saying, well, if you do it like this, then I guess we won't shoot your dog for now. Because again, these like you mentioned, these are just.
Well, we might change our mind.
Yeah, it's not law itself. It's just the way that they're enforcing the already vague laws on the books, and at least when it comes to guns, a lot of it's just because it's purely outdated by technology. You know, and as technology advances, people are just finding loopholes and ways around. Like the idea with like you can't have a rapid fire machine gun. But I can get a device that basically allows me to fire at the same rate of fire as a machine gun, and about as accurate as a machine gun, because machine guns aren't very accurate in the first place. you know, but it's not technically a machine gun, because the way that the ATF has classified what a machine gun is, it doesn't fall into that. That is basically how it's a constant race between people to find loopholes and the regulators to say, well, are we gonna, you know, take your stuff because of you found this loophole. Kind of what you mentioned about, like, Trump just walking in and saying, you know, we're going to build the wall and not being able to happen. You know, you think about it, though. Trump ran as a Republican. He may not have been the most popular amongst his party, but he ran, and basically the Republicans won control of the House, control of the Senate, and they control the presidency. So for at least 2 years, the Republicans essentially had a one-party state at the federal level. Now, I don't know about how much attention you were paying during 2016. I had so many pie-in-the-sky Gary Johnson supporters coming to me saying, look.
He can do it. He's going to do it this time. Everything's
Gary Johnson's
going
to walk on into the White House. So Gary Johnson's going to get one vote in the Electoral College, and that's going to push it to Congress.
He didn't even get the
one. Congress is going to give away all their party lines and go Gary Johnson. And when they go Gary Johnson, he's going to win the White House. When he wins the White House, he's going to do this, he's going to do that, and he's going to do it all without a single libertarian in Congress, because we can't give support to Congress people because it's not flashy and sexy like the presidential race. And then, you know, and I'm called the idealist.
What was funny
I'm
was like
unrealistic.
The thing with libertarians is there's no such thing as a real libertarian, except for obviously Clayton Hunt, the only real libertarian.com. That's www.theonlyreallibertarian.com. What's funny is like I'll admit, let me preface it with this. I've heard some libertarians running for Congress and Senate say some pretty ridiculous state of shit. Let's start. let me preface it with that. At the same time, you have a lot of you have a lot of these supporters who were Gary Johnson supporters who were saying, I'm not going to support any of these down ticket candidates because they're all talking crazy shit. This guy wants to legalize heroin. This guy, you know, like, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, I know legalizing heroin sounds crazy, but versus the guys who's running against him, who wants to like triple taxes and you know, create like the Space Force and all this other crap. I get it. Some of them are kind of crazy, but the reality is, and I don't know. It's still kind of a difficult call for me to make, because the you know, what I'd like to see is a lot of kind of the intellectual libertarians running, but instead all they do shit is like blogs and podcasts. Like, what the fuck are we on? Taxationistheft.info podcast. But like, you know, it's like, what's interesting is like we have a lot of really interesting thought leaders who are creating these like interesting, like they're great debaters, master debaters, and these are the conversations they should be taking to Congress, because when Congress says, hey, we're going to pass this new law, we should have these like intellectuals in there saying, well, you shouldn't, and let me tell you why, and like that should be the conversation. And the reality is like, no, it's just it's like all this like hysterical emotional bullshit going back and forth. And so what happens is we have these like really good philosophical, you know, thought leaders in the libertarian movement, anarchists, libertarians, minarchists, whatever. And they inspire a lot of people. And these people, I don't want to say they're lesser of beings than the thought leaders, but they're kind of regurgitating. They're basically taking some of the ideas that they heard, and they're saying, yeah, these are really great ideas, we should implement them. And then they're saying, I'm inspired, I'm fired up, I want to run. And the reality is they're not master debaters. They're just kind of like you know, and I'm not saying they couldn't be, like, definitely with practice. I mean, I started out that way. I heard a few things and I was angry and I was like, hey, I want to fucking run for whatever. But the reality is, like, we really need to work on that and practice that, because we're not going to just get elected and start writing laws and doing the same shit. The reality is, what we need to do is we have this forum. Like, I get it. Government shouldn't exist and voting is a scam, and you're endorsing the violence of the state by running or voting. And all. Like, I understand all that. But the reality is, by not voting, it's not just going to go away. And if we can jump into that conversation and we can throw some counter arguments in a place where people are actually going to hear them, then that might actually influence the populace. And the populace needs to be influenced, because the reality is, until the populace understands we don't need government, there will be government. Because if we all got elected today and we said we're going to dissolve the government, some asshole salesman's going to come along tomorrow and say, hey, you know what you guys need that's going to solve all your problems? Government. And everybody, the entire population who thinks like, yeah, whatever happened to that government that we used to have? It was so great. They're going to say, yeah, let's hire this guy. He's willing to steal our money and build things that we don't need.
Well, and you know, to those that would say, you know, don't participate because it just, there's no point, it's useless. You know, if you look at my general election, this was my first time running for office ever. And in this past election, I had taken their advice and not run for office and just kind of sat at home and, you know, played video games and bitched on Facebook about you know, status. You people running for office, you people voting. Basically, it wouldn't have done anything. Like, if my it would have just made it a lot easier on my a lot more statist opponent. I mean, she would have had a lot easier time. She would have been able to, you know, focus fully on running for the state senate and not have to worry about running for state house, because she'd be the only name on the ballot again. Like she had been for time and time, in the past years. I mean, it would have just made it so much easier for her. But because I did run, she actually did have to spend money on signs for her state house race and making sure they're distributed and making sure that there's people that are going to vote for her. Because if no one knew to vote for her for state house, they're all looking for state senate. Then basically I could have won. So she had to take time, energy, and resources and put it towards running again in this race that she's not used to running for. Again, she has not had an opponent for years. Like, I made my opponent actually have to do something. And that may not be, you know, standing outside the White House waving a black and yellow flag while pulling the rope for the guillotine to you know, behead the last politician. But that's where it starts. Making them have to actually work for it. Making them actually have to work harder for it. Making it not be, you know, such a walk in the park, such a, you know, piece of cake to do the evil that they're doing. You make it a little bit harder. And eventually someone's going to get discouraged. And then you start making it harder and harder and harder. And then suddenly you start picking off the low-hanging fruit of those that are more easily discouraged. And suddenly the statists have to actually fight. And like you mentioned, like people going, oh, hey, well, what happened to that government thing? It made me think about I was talking to a coworker the other day, and we were talking about schools. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of government schools. And I was saying, yeah, of course, you know, public schooling is indoctrination towards the government. If I, you know, told you, hey, you're going to send your kid to Walmart schools and they're going to have, you know, around the top of the classroom, the CEOs of like Walmart. And you're going to say every morning, you're going to say a Pledge of Allegiance to the Walmart flag, you know, with you know, good service and low prices for all,
which is probably, I mean, what they do, like to start the work day every day. But
but if I told you your kid was going to go through that, you'd say, what? That's some weird cult of Walmart. And I said, well, they're going to say the presidents and the national anthem, to the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States, to the federal government, and then, you know, they're going to learn about the history of the government and how wonderful the government is and how terrible things were until the government came in and fixed it all. You'd say, well, it's normal. It's what I went through. People are, you know, used to this and making people have to, like, I got 10% in a race that normally no one really cares about. That's at least 10% of the vote of people who saw my name, saw Libertarian, and said, oh, I guess I might vote for them, or just didn't want to vote for the Democrat. At least a few of them are going to at least say, well, who was that Clayton guy that I voted for? And then that seed's being planted, and we're breaking out. There's people that are going to break out of those years of indoctrination they spent in public schools just because I ran for office and you know, had a fun time doing it too. I'll admit it was fun.
Yeah. It's also, you know, it's inspiring to people also to, you know, this might, like, running for an office might not be the end all solution, but neither is a podcast, neither is talking shit to people on Facebook. Like, but when you mix them all together, you start, like you said, planting seeds and influencing minds, and it kind of grows as a movement. Like, what I started doing was, you know, I started running for Texas House. That was the first thing I did. Well, no, before that, I created some blogs. I started doing a little bit of social media, and I was like, I want to do more. I want to reach more people. And realistically, it's like, look, if all you want to do is be one of these people on social media spreading the word, spreading the good word of anarchy, that's great. But there are other people who have stepped it up to the next level by running for office. And yes, that might not be the way to, that's not the end game solution. Like, the, you know, but they've stepped it up. They're doing more. They're on a higher platform. They're reaching more people. They're doing more. And so it's just the next level. And so I would say to anybody who's like, you know, if you're one of these internet warriors, that's great. Step it up, run for an office, and get in front of more people that are willing to listen. Because the reality is, like, not everybody's on Facebook, or not everybody's in your bubble. Like, there are people on Facebook who will never ever see a post about any kind of anarchy meme or anything. No taxation.
And they're
theft
on your
memes.
Friends list. And they're already on your friends list, and they're never going to see anything that you post.
That too.
You can post all about anarchy. You can post the dankest of dank memes, and they're never going to see a thing you post. And it's the algorithm.
But
I really wouldn't even say running for office is a higher level, because the way I see it is, you know, there's going to be people that need to talk shit on Facebook. That's absolutely a valuable, like, part of spreading the message. There's people that are going to have to run for office. There's people that are going to have to write blogs and do podcasts and, you know, make YouTube videos and do this and that. And there's 1,000 different ways of spreading the message. And everyone, there needs to be people that are going to be doing it all. You know, someone's got to do the, you know, talk shit on Facebook. Someone's got to write blogs. Someone's got to make podcasts. Someone's got to run for office. Someone's got to run the party. I think where, like, my critiques come in is that things like someone's got to talk shit on Facebook is, it's not that it's on a lower level. It's that it's got a lower barrier of entry to actually doing it. So a lot of people tend to push towards that because it's easier.
Sure.
And, you know, it's easier to start talking shit on Facebook. You're going to run into some familial problems at first, maybe, you know, great grandma saw your post about
what's
cops
this crap you're posting about the police.
Yeah, don't you back the blue? I can't believe you don't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Back in my day, that's a hangable offense.
Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of different ways, and I mean, you know, realistically, like, you know, literally standing on a soapbox outside of a Walmart with a megaphone preaching the word of anarchy is like, it's not a bad thing. It's another thing. Like, you know, you're going to piss some people off and some people are going to like it. Some people are going to hear it. Like, they're not going to like it and they're going to hear it, but then they're going to hear it again in a month from somewhere else. And then they're going to hear it again in a month from somewhere else. And that's actually really important. That's like the Justin Bieber effect. Like, you hear a shitty song that you really hate, but you hear it 30 times, and the next thing you know, you're fucking singing along with it. Like, it's... And the reality is, like, you know, some people will say, oh, but that's manipulating people. Well, okay, but, you know, it's okay to shoot somebody in self-defense, right? It's wrong to shoot people, but it's okay to shoot someone in self-defense. Well, these people are being manipulated by mainstream... mainstream politics. They're being manipulated into thinking that they need a state and all this other crap. So
they literally have 13 years of 8-hour days, 5 days a week of manipulation.
They're exactly.
If they're saying we're manipulating them,
we're unmanipulating, if anything. We're using the same tactics that were used to manipulate them to unbrainwash them.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, some people say that you know, they don't agree with that philosophy and they think that it's immoral, but hey, that's the one I choose, so fuck me, I guess I'm an asshole.
And you don't even need, there's different ways to do that. I mean, like, I kind of like the, you know, I've read a bit of Alinsky and I kind of like some of his things where his main focus is, like, making things funny and making things relatable. You know, I remember one time... he was talking about the idea of, you know, a black neighborhood in the city was, and it was Chicago, was receiving a lot of police brutality. They weren't, you know, basically on equal, on par with other white neighborhoods. So his idea that he never actually followed through with, but he had planned, was because the, you know, aldermen, the you know, established gentlemen fathers of the city weren't listening to him. His idea was, who are they going to listen to? They're going to listen to their wives. What do their wives love? Their wives love the symphony. So what you do is you get a bunch of the residents of this poor, impoverished, you know, oppressed community that the city is, you know, holding down. You buy up just a couple rows of symphony tickets and you hold a big bean dinner before the event, and then you hold your own sort of symphony. And the idea of, like, it's bathroom humor, of course, but the idea of, you know, you're gonna go into the symphony and fart so that because the leaders of the city's families love the symphony, and you're going to go in and basically show your discontent in a way that they can't say you can't fart in here because it's a natural bodily occurrence.
Oh man,
like that was hilarious. There was an idea of they were gonna have a shit in, and it was at airport.
Hold on, I was just already like, Martha, I think that trombone is off key. Just like picturing,
I do have a trombone in here, so I better watch out. I might play my trombone off key. But so that, again, like, a lot of it comes down to, like, bodily humor, but that seems to be one of those like human things. We always find bathroom humor hilarious, no matter what generation, throughout time, throughout space. You're always going to find bathroom humor. And so, like, that's why a lot of his reliance on that in his political, like, ideas and activism kind of translates, like, the shit in, where the idea was at the airport, what happens when you get off the plane? You got to use the bathroom. You've been on the airplane, especially in those times when airplane bathrooms were not a thing or were not.
And as somebody who sat in the last row next to the bathroom, thank you for holding in.
Yeah, yeah. So his idea was he was going to get some of those same residents from that community to go to the different bathrooms. And, like, for the stalls, basically they'd get a stack of books or magazines or whatever, and they just sit there all day. What are you going to do? Tell them they got to get out. They're busy. And for like the urinals, he said it was a kind of a more, you know, troubling thing. But, you know, just sit there for a little bit. Wait. And then get out and get back in line. You just do a rotating line. And so people may get through, but it's going to be a long time in line to get through. And the idea was that if people are saying, well, the bathrooms at, the Chicago airport are terrible, they're always busy, then it hurts the tourism and it hurts the, thinking about the larger impact of your activism, but for something that's kind of small, but it's also kind of funny to where you could.
Yeah, I mean, I can see newspapers just writing articles about that just because, like, hey, people will read this. Let me publish that.
Oh, yeah. That would be all over the news. Imagine, like, today if something like that happened. You would have CNN for a week just, they're like, sitting in the newsroom like, boys, we don't have to work this week. It just writes itself.
I'm gonna get a colostomy bag and just, like, pop a hole in it and walk around the police station. I'm inspired now.
You could. I mean, and what are they going to do? Say, hey, your colostomy bag's leaking. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
And as I try to pick it up, I'm squeezing it, and it's just squirting everywhere, squirting all over the cops. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed. Yeah,
oh, man.
Yeah.
This sounds like an In Living Color sketch.
Exactly. And but using humor like that, and there's different ways to approach it with different kinds of humor. Yeah, you don't have to only do bathroom humor. You can do all sorts of different kinds of humor. But that sort of like making a mockery of that which doesn't want, which deems itself above, mockery. That's the kind of like political activism that appeals to me. So when I'm running for office, I'm not sitting here wearing a suit telling you, well, if you vote for me, I'll lower the rate of increase of taxes by 1% per year. I'm saying, no, fuck you. I'm running for office in a t-shirt and pants. And I, sitting here in my room with my gun, waiting on the happening, waiting for them to get on the horn and shout Wolverine so we can go in the woods and,
Hey, how many states is that gun legal in?
Because
I'm guessing it's not legal in California.
It is definitely not legal.
I just wanted to talk shit. I would be happy if you said it was legal in 49 states.
It's got the high capacity evil assault.
Oh my god. Thing.
It does not have a bullet button, though.
It's got a pistol.
It does not have a bullet button.
It's got the pistol grip.
It's got a pistol grip.
And
it is not California or New York legal. It is definitely not legal. I don't think it's legal in New Jersey. Certain localities.
Probably not
in
New
Colorado.
York, right?
Not New York. Definitely not New York.
I saw an interesting meme today. Yes, there I go, referencing a meme again. It was a picture of a cop. I just got to say, Desiree and Rod Weber are going off like crazy in the comments right now with some pretty awesome stuff. They said, don't plant seeds, plant spores.
Plant pigs.
Yeah. So this
not
meme.
Yet. Not yet. We're getting there.
This meme was, it had a cop with an assault rifle, so-called assault rifle. And the meme said, why do people need assault rifles? And then it said, well, why do police need assault rifles? Because people face the same problems as the police, except the people are always there before the police get there. So if the police need assault rifles, why shouldn't the people have them? I thought that was a pretty good way to rationalize it.
There was one that said, are you really willing to kill a cop over a 30-round magazine? And the response is a cop really willing to die to make sure I don't have a 30-round magazine?
Yeah, it's funny how like you can always frame that argument. You know, like, man, there's, I'm just like, I'm gonna go to an extreme here. Bulletproof vests are illegal in a lot of places. Well, why would you need a bulletproof vest if you're not doing anything wrong?
Well,
have the police never shot anybody who wasn't doing anything wrong? Of course, all the time. You can always, like, if you frame it in people's minds, well, he had a bulletproof vest. He must have been, like, some sort of felon because, or he was a felon because he had the bulletproof vest itself made him a felon. So it was justified when the police killed him because he had a, like, his only crime was wearing a bulletproof vest.
That's like getting arrested for resisting arrest.
Exactly.
Which, fun fact, so I actually, so the new DA, and that was my gun following. The new DA in Boston actually has a list of offenses she will not accept charges for.
Oh, I saw that.
And one of those is standalone resisting arrest charges. You can't be arrested for resisting arrest, which is great. I think that's perfect. I think if you, if I were to ever consider a run for some sort of local law enforcement or judicial, themed office, I definitely think that would be a great part of my part of a campaign is.
What's interesting about that one is, like, I've always wondered, I've never seen a case play out with that. I mean, we know 95% of all cases are guilty pleas. But what about, so if somebody's arrested for resisting arrest, I'm wondering if that's ever been taken to trial. Like, because here's what I see. Somebody's arrested for resisting arrest. They go to court, they show up, and they have to face the prosecutor because it's a misdemeanor or a felony, whatever, wherever you are, whatever it's worth.
Yeah.
And the prosecutor is going to tell you, oh, okay, well, let's have a discussion. You want an attorney? Okay, we're going to get you an attorney. Now, here's the deal. You can go to trial and you're going to lose because we're the government, or you can just plead guilty. And most people are going to say, well, shit, I don't know. I'm just going to plead guilty because I'm scared. Then you're going to have the guys who hire a lawyer, and the lawyer is going to say, what? Okay, we're going to take this to trial, but you're going to have to prove that this was a lawful arrest because you can't resist an unlawful arrest because the Supreme Court already says you can use lethal force to kill an officer to resist an unlawful arrest if it's necessary. You can kill the cop. Yeah. And it is legal to resist arrest if it's an unlawful arrest. So you're going to have to prove that it was a lawful arrest. And if you don't have anything else to charge him with and you didn't have a warrant, how are you going to prove that? Now, of course, most of the people who don't have the attorney who's going to say all that and don't know these laws and don't know what the Supreme Court has rules, they're just going to plead guilty. But yeah, to everybody else, they're just going to be dismissed. So I actually wonder if that's ever played out. And I always ask these questions. I can probably Google it and find out. When I had James Weeks on the show, I asked, has anybody actually been arrested for performing an unlicensed marriage? And to my surprise, the answer was actually yes. They've arrested people.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's fucking insane. What is wrong with you people? But yeah, I saw that and I thought that was really great. And she was kind of criticized because I think some of the things she had were also like shoplifting under $250, which is kind of
So I read through the list and I kind of read also into her reasoning of why certain things were on the list. I think the shoplifting thing, especially under $250, and I think she said larceny, which because a lot of times it'll be prosecuted under larceny just because it's a little bit more serious than shoplifting, is because you can make the victim whole by giving them back their stuff. Or,
right.
The first thing should be making the victim whole. So you make the victim whole.
Restitution argument. Yeah, and that's
– Yeah.
And that's and fair because it's – you know, if – I mean, I guess the idea is maybe some sort of punitive damage to prevent it from happening again. But the reality is, if we look at, let's say you have a renter Let's say you're a landlord and you have a renter, and the renter moves out, and they just totally trash the apartment. They pull all the walls down and they wreck the place, right? That's the police aren't going to do anything about that. They're not going to arrest the guy. That's going to be – they're going to say, well, that's a civil issue. You're going to have to sue him. And it's up to the landlord to take that person to court. And I think that, like, when we talk about shoplifting and a lot of these crimes like this, it should be on – because we're talking about resources here. We're talking about tax money, right? Now, I get that, like, we want to discourage people from stealing, which is really a great idea. But you have, like, you have a company like Walmart. Walmart probably gets robbed like 100 times a day. Small things, right? Do we want the government, our taxpayers, to basically – because so many people hate Walmart anyway, right? Like, oh, yeah, they don't pay their employees enough. They have all these excuses to hate Walmart. Do you really want your tax money then paying to protect Walmart and to fine the criminals? Or do you want Walmart to use some of the – because they're already using their profit to insure their losses. So if somebody steals from them, no big deal. Why not make them, if you want to prosecute these people, you take them to court, you sue them, you pay for the prosecutor, you pay to get your items back from this person or to get repaid from this person. And an even bigger one is the movie industry where, you know, the government spends I don't know how many millions or billions of dollars going around the world looking for counterfeiters to stop, you know, movie bootleggers. They're spending our money to protect private corporations and their interests. Now, I get the idea, and we could debate all day about whether IP is even property or not, but I get the idea that we're trying to protect people from stealing, whether or not stealing is, you know, whatever. We're trying to protect people from stealing stuff, but the people who are not being stolen from because they're not involved in a business that's that easy to steal from are having to pay for the protection of massive corporations who make billions of dollars in profit. The poor people are now paying for the rich people's protection. And that to me is completely stupid.
Well, that's kind of the way a lot of taxes work. I mean, we talk about taxing corporations, but I mean, really, at the end of the day, who pays the bill? Who pays the bill for taxes, especially tax increases? The working poor. I mean, you know,
the people who are getting their guns confiscated are paying armed guards to protect the Congress people.
It's
so fucking backwards. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, if I go to Walmart and say, okay, Walmart, we're going to put a 10%, we're going to raise your taxes 10%. They're going, okay. So we got to raise prices. And yeah, they don't want to raise prices. Yeah, that they may not necessarily just raise prices. They may just lower the size of their products so they can give them the same price but give you a little bit less. They're going to make their money somehow. And who at the end of the day is paying the bill? It's the people who are the customers. And you know, it doesn't, you know, these massive corporations make all this money, but they're going to have their profits one way or the other. And if you do stuff like, you know, punitive taxing and you know, all these, you're only going to hurt those that you're trying to protect. And, you know, when you enact all these laws that basically protect things like IP that are, you know, super strict on, you know, small thefts, you're really only protecting those that are massively wealthy at the expense of those who are desperately poor. And that's kind of the way the government works, is it does socialize a lot of costs and without, you know, any of the socialization of the end results from that.
Yeah. Man, it's I don't know. I'm like, okay, I need to lower my blood pressure here for a minute. Yeah, it's you know, when you talk about like the the ratio of, you know, the idea is make someone whole, right? Like that's the whole concept of a civil suit. And now somebody's been bootlegging your movie and they stole $10 from you. And here's the thing, like the person who this is, you can't even calculate it. Look, because realistically, right? Somebody, let's say somebody buys a bootleg of Finding Nemo for $5 on the street, right?
Yeah.
That what's going to happen to that movie, right? Do you really think that if those bootleggers were there, that person is not going to go spend $20 on the full official DVD on full retail price? Because they might just say that's too expensive. I'm not going to spend that money. So it's not like you lost that $20 sale. But on top of that, you have now a market where people who can't, like maybe they want to save the $15, maybe they can't afford the extra $15. So they're buying Finding Nemo and they show it to their kids and now their kids are like, well, hey, you know, next time mom's shopping for like cereal and then there's like, oh, look, here's the Finding Nemo Rice Krispies. I don't know what fucking branding they have, but I'm sure like, you know, they put like whatever, there's branded cereals, there's branded stuff. Maybe there's a toy at the checkout lane or you know, whatever it is. Right. And it's got Nemo on and it's like, mommy, I want this. You might make your $15 or $20 back there.
Yeah, and then some. I mean, honestly, there was a case for years, and not even just talking about movies, but you know, especially with when it comes down to like pirating, but music is especially one of the areas where pirating is very prolific. It has been. It's actually dropped off a lot, but in Japan, the music industry, they found out that actually going after piracy like hardcore hurt their sales, because what was happening was people would, you know, go out and download the album for free, listen to the album for free, and then go out and buy merchandise, go out and buy concert tickets. And that's where a lot of the music industry actually makes their money. Well, the artists make their money, the music.
Right.
The record label.
And of course, the labels are pissed off because they make their money on the CDs.
Yeah. So. And so artists were getting hurt because they started cracking down on piracy and people said, you know, weren't finding new music. They weren't going to shows. They weren't buying merchandise because they didn't know the artists because they didn't really care. And actually, but even with stuff like piracy, like you mentioned with you know, someone may not be willing to spend $20 on the official, you know, feature length DVD at the store, but they may be willing to pay $5 for it, right? Well, normal marketing would say, well, you're overpriced yourself. You've priced yourself out of your market. And what the problem is...
Well, but they want to capitalize on the wealthy people first. Because eventually they'll lower the price.
But instead of saying, well, you know, we've kind of had a bit bad business model, they say, oh, hey, government, we want to keep our bad business model. Like, will you come in and punish these people because we want to have a bad business model? And government goes, okay, I guess I'll go punish some people who crack some shells, because that's the way government is. And, you know, what I'm actually seeing is, and what's really happening is that's killing piracy is Spotify. You know, stuff like Spotify, Pandora, all these apps where you can listen to whatever music you want to listen to. You can listen to it for free with like, you know, a couple ads every now and then, or you pay like, you know, $10 a month and you get to listen to it with all the different features and everything that they have in there. It's they found the price point where it's like enough to where people make money, but not enough to where people are like, yeah, fuck this. I'm going to go to the Pirate Bay. And they found like a niche market, like the right balance to where people are not pirating as much. Netflix, they found the you know, nice center balance where people aren't pirating as much because they're paying for Netflix. I mean, I think Netflix finally like surpassed porn on total network traffic on the internet. You know,
I don't believe that.
I no, believe me, like it was very recently.
Maybe it's because they got 4K now.
But you know, it's very recently, you know, but the fact is that with when your market is telling you your current business model is not in with the times, your business model is outdated, which is what piracy is telling you know, the movie industry, towards, you know, record labels, towards TV show, you know, all sorts of parts of Hollywood. That's what piracy was telling them, is your business model is not working for the current technology. And at first, the reaction was the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And that was, we're going to hold on to this business model. You can have it from our cold, dead hands. And eventually, over time, they started having to realize that technology itself was just unstoppable. And they were going to adapt or die. And that's why you see all these different, you know, legitimate streaming services that have popped up that essentially kind of all do the same thing, because that's what the market is saying. We want this. I don't want to have to, you know, host, you know, a terabyte of movies and music on my hard drive. I want to just pull it up on the computer and watch it when I want to watch it. You know?
Right.
That's what people are saying. That's even happening for video games. There's a service that will allow you to port in through your, you know, regular old janky computer into a gaming computer, and basically you can play a high-level gaming computer on your janky computer and basically do that remotely. And that's the kind of stuff that's happening. It's kind of how everyone was talking about Uber everything. There's going to be a Netflix of everything. You know, wow. You're not going to own your video games anymore. You're going to, you know, have an online service that basically allows you to play whatever game you really want to. You should just subscribe to the service.
Yeah, or you're going to be like pressing fucking buttons on your phone and then like, hey, watch an ad. Hey, buy this for 99 cents. Like, I don't want to tell you what kind of shitty games I'm playing, but
oh no, I totally understand microtransactions. I've played some mobile games before. I definitely understand.
That's a fascinating market right there.
Oh yeah, no, but I think it's kind of going to hit, you're going to hit. So you think about like Hulu though, right? So Hulu, you can watch it for free, and there's limited stuff. There's stuff you can't watch.
But yeah, you can watch a lot of stuff for free. They won't send it to Mexico. I'm not allowed to watch it, and not even through a VPN. They've got the VPNs all blacklisted.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I remember I was heavily on VPNs. I was trying to watch Netflix, and I was like, oh wait, it won't let me watch Netflix. Why?
Man, at least Netflix has. I think it's technically a separate service. I don't know if my Netflix account, so I have a Mexican Netflix account. I don't know if it'll work in the U.S., but it's that stuff is all mind blowing to me. Like it's, and I'm not even sure the reason for some of these things. Like I know, like, you know, some I guess like they've got like contracts between like the producers of the shows and like some other shit, but. Yeah. You know, it's not like the content is illegal in another country. I don't know why they can't just say, like, it sucks because, you know, we talk about like borders are completely unnecessary, but then we see like these high tech companies that are kind of, they're getting over the hurdles of like these problems that we're talking about, like piracy, and, you know, they're solving the world's problems with technology, and the internet is like so wonderful because the internet has no borders, but at the same time, yeah. They're sticking borders on these new technologies. And it's like, guys, fucking get over it. There's money to be made in every country.
Well, but you notice things like VPNs, right? That's, I mean, if you can use a VPN with like Netflix, you know, because mine, it was just telling me like, are you sure you're in this country or whatever? But you can like use a VPN with Netflix and get around that border. You're essentially, it's kind of like the olden days of piracy.
It's like you're digging a tunnel under the border and smuggling data through a digital pipe.
Well, but even then, like the limited access of things like that. I mean, you look at, because it didn't, like, Netflix lowered piracy. It definitely made it less prevalent, but it didn't go away. There's still reasons to pirate things. There's still, like, it's not available on Netflix. It's not available on Hulu or Amazon Prime Video or whatever. It's not available where I'm at. So I need to pirate it because it's the only way I can find it.
Hypothetically, of course.
There's things that... Hypothetically. Like, hypothetically, I've been wanting to watch the, I think it was like a Showtime thing, The Masters of Horror. So I heard there's a lot of really good episodes in that series. And it's not on Showtime. It's not on Hulu. It's not on Amazon Prime Video. It's not on Netflix. You know, I don't know where to find it. Well, hypothetically, you might be able to get it on a pirating website somewhere.
And what's interesting about that too is, like, and this goes back into the contracts that, like, these networks have with the affiliates. I won't say how I know this, but I have a little bit of insight into that industry. It's like, so you have this kind of trap where a lot of the networks, like, let's say you go to HBO or Showtime or, I don't know, Fox News, Comedy Central, like, you know, a lot of these, like, you know, basic cable channels, you can, like, they have a lot of their shows online for you to watch.
Yeah.
And they have, like, it's free because they're still going to make you watch commercials, like, you know, something like Comedy Central would have commercials, but you can't sign in unless you subscribe to cable. And your cable provider works with this. So, like, let's say you want to watch Comedy Central, but you have, like, some weird, small, like, rural area cable company, and they don't support integration, you can't sign in. You're screwed.
Yeah.
If you have Cox Cable, Time Warner, any of those, you can sign in. Assuming you have this channel already in your package, even though you're going to be forced to watch commercials.
Oh, yeah.
And they won't, because it's like, you know, everyone's been asking for a la carte, right? I don't want 500 channels. I just, like, I had this problem, like, when I don't even have cable anymore, but I used to, and I wanted two channels, Cartoon Network and Comedy Central. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted to watch. And to get those, they weren't on the bottom tier. I had to get, like, three or four tiers up and pay like $80 a month. And I was like, why? I don't want all these other channels. I just want these two. And now I can't go buy. And you know, there's like, I'm sure it's like the cable companies are strong arming the Comedy Central so that they can't, I'm not affiliated with either one of those. That's why I'm using them as an example. They're strong arming Comedy Central. Well, if you want us to carry you on our network, you know, to our cable subscribers, you can't sell direct to consumer because that's going to hurt our business. They're going to say, we don't need cable. We just want your one channel. Why would we pay you $70 a month for that one channel when I can just pay Comedy Central directly $5 a month or something like that? Yeah. But they are losing all of their customers to services like Netflix and Hulu and all these other things. So the reality is, yeah, they're losing that ability to strong arm these networks into that. And so some of these networks, they're eventually going to say, fuck you. You want to get rid of us? Get rid of us. Everyone's on the internet anyway. They're going to pay us $5 a month and we'll cut our commercials out. And now...
Oh, yeah. No. Like, I remember I was talking to my parents about, like, cable. And I remember they were talking about from their childhood, cable was... You didn't have commercials. You were paying for it. And now, like, I haven't had cable for a long time, but I've, in my life, all I've ever known is cable is you just have special different channels that are separate.
Better quality.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of seeing.
Well, I mean, like, a lot of low quality. Picture quality. I mean, because, like, you would still get, like, your air channels, like CBS, NBC. Yeah. You'd still get those, but the picture would be clear.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I've had money years for most of my life. For, you know, whatever TV I needed just for local news or something. But, you know, I really haven't had cable most of my life. You know, and even then, like, it, for me, I would really never know what to do with cable. Because, like, I don't need it. Yeah.
And some people are like, "So take my cable away, I will stab you with this spoon." What a fucking world we live in. All right, well, we're kind of going over time, but it's always awesome talking with you. I just kind of want to regroup and say, if you live around Houston, go out and vote. We don't know exactly when the special election is going to be yet. We'll probably have you on again before the actual election, to get the word out about that. But go participate.
Or, wait, you have me on the election when we call the revolution, right? Have me back on before the election if we call the revolution.
Yes, if we call, I will definitely. The revolution. Well, there is a revolution. Should I say fomenting? I don't know exactly what's going on, but they're talking about the green vest, the yellow vests, out here somewhere in Texas, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
So we're trying to get some more information on that, and we'll do a little broadcast and bring you the news. But I wanna get everyone to follow you on theonlyreallibertarian.com, because you are theonlyreallibertarian.com, except for me, because I'm like, I guess I'm, oh, I lost you. I'm a surreal, can I say I'm a surreal libertarian if you're the only real libertarian?
Sure.
Okay. I'll take that. So, theonlyreallibertarian.com, and what else? You've got your Facebook page.
Clayton Hunt Libertarian, Hunt Libertarian on Twitter, Clayton Hunt Libertarian on Instagram. Basically, I'm Clayton Hunt. I'm libertarian.
Just put the two words together wherever you find them.
Yeah. Yeah. if you're looking for Clayton Hunt, the libertarian, you can put Clayton Hunt libertarian anywhere. Basically just follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram. Check out my campaign page. If you want to look, I'm on CrowdPack, because that's been one of my more favorite, fundraising sites, because it kind of allows you to view, like, where your donations are going to campaigns. Also, they're really good with helping, like, smaller candidates raise funds and be more active. If you're looking for my inevitable special election, whatever they call it, I'm going to be running for House District 145 in Houston. It's Houston, South Houston, Pasadena, in the South Belt Ellington area. So if you're in that area of Houston, or you know someone in that area of Houston and they're registered to vote, tell them to go vote, because realistically, this could come down to 1,000 votes. A couple hundred votes here, a couple hundred votes there could be the determining of this election.
And if you don't vote because you hate the system and you don't want to participate in it, I mean, it's not like you're making the government bigger by voting. You might as well just waste a couple minutes and throw a stick in their spokes, right?
Yeah. Thumb your nose at the system.
Yeah, go give them the finger.
If you can't stand the government, you think, oh, voting is terrible, its status is evil. Basically, think of voting for me as thumbing your nose at the system, saying, nana, nana, boo, boo, stick your head in doo-doo. And that's all you're doing.
Or go spit on the machine, or stick gum in the slot where they stick it. Like, I'm not seriously asking you to go damage government property, of course. Actually, it's not their property. It's private property. I think they lease them, or they rent them from, like, a whatever. Anyway, disclaimer, I'm not actually asking you to do this. But, I mean, go destroy the machines or something, whatever you want, hypothetically.
Yeah, you could hypothetically destroy the machine pretty well.
Yeah, or spit on it, or just do the leaky colostomy bag, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. I wonder if like a really strong magnet will work. You do have an excuse to not bring your phone in.
You'd need a magnetron. I don't even know that's a real thing.
But I'm not sure. I'm just hypothetically. I'm just curious and thinking out loud to myself. I wonder if a really strong magnet would work on that, but I don't know.
Nobody uses magnetic hard drives anymore. Well, wait, no, it's the government.
The government.
They could they could be using 45-year-old hard drives in there for all I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Clayton, it's been awesome having you on again. Again, this podcast is available on taxationstheft.info, and you can go get some swag on taxationstheft.cards. And Clayton, what is taxation?
Theft.
Damn right it is. All right, I'll see you guys again soon. Taxation is theft. Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.
You boys like Mexico?